This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who, with their financial support, help keep this podcast going from week to week, month to month, and year to year. We sincerely appreciate every listener who is out there tuning in and listening to these podcasts because we know you have a lot of other options. But we particularly thank those who put their money where their ears are. So thank you guys very much. And in particular, we just had a nice donation from Samuel Thielman and also a pledge from Michael W. McClure. Thank you guys very much for your support. It really goes a long way towards making this podcast go a long way. So thank you. And if anybody else would be interested in seeing how that you can help support us then as well, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com and there you can see a tab that you can click and you can learn how that you can make a donation or a pledge, whichever might happen to fit your pocketbook. And we appreciate whatever little bit or as much as you can to help support us as frequently as you can then too. This week's episode is coming to you from Las Vegas. We're going to be here for a month, and we've been talking with some people already, seeing some shows, and talking with several people, and one of them this week is Losander. And Dirk Losander has his own magic theater here in town, and I went to see his show, which I highly recommend, and think that if you have an opportunity to get out, you should check it out. It is a nice, intimate theater. We go into a little bit of detail about that here this week. One of the reasons we talk so much about the theater is not so much just to promote his show, but in particular, there might be some others across the country or the world who might be considering having their own theater, and what kind of theater might work for you might also be the kind that coincidentally works for Losander. So anyhow, it's interesting because there are so many people who have different ideas around the world for opening theaters and for running them, and so he gives you some ideas on that, as well as a lot of other things that we talk about, particularly since he is known as the master of levitation. I'll talk a little bit about how he got inspired to do some levitations, as well as other magic when he was growing up. So learn a little bit about his past then as well. Well, he's going to explain it all here in this week's episode, so let me step aside and introduce my guest, my friend and yours, someone that you often see at magic conventions, and he'll be coming up as a dealer and performer at some this year as well, which we will talk about. Please welcome Dirk Losander here on The Magic Word. Today, or this evening, we are in Las Vegas, actually at the Las Vegas Magic Theater. There are several magicians who are working throughout Las Vegas and several who are working in theaters, but none that are named the Magic Theater. We are here then with the person who had started this and stars in it, who is from Germany, and many of you know him, have seen him perform. You may have purchased many of his things when he has been a dealer at the magic conventions. Please welcome my friend and yours, Dirk Losander. Hi, Dirk.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Great. I'm glad that I got a chance to finally sit down and chat with you for a little bit, and right. Particularly here after the show, after a few people have come and gone then already.
Right,
so
right,
how
right.
long has this theater actually been here in
it's
Vegas?
It's now a little bit over 3 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. And when you started this, have there been many changes since it first opened?
Oh, yeah. We were first in a very different location. Right now we're directly on the Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
Before we were in the Art District.
Well, not too far from here, because the Art District is just on Main Street,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like not far from here, maybe like 10 minutes to walk, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very smaller theater, and we started the whole thing as a hobby, you know.
Okay, just thought, hey, we can have some place
yeah,
to practice almost.
Because I always wanted to have like a little theater, and my wife said, hey, why don't we create one? And,
sure.
And then we started, and then I had to go on a big tour through Europe. And we did like almost like 30 shows overseas, and then came back, did a couple shows here, and then COVID happened.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom.
Bad timing.
And then I was thinking maybe we close it, you know what I mean? And my wife said, no, let's just go full-blown into it, because we were in a rare position. We were also a store, and we had license to perform.
Yep.
And so we were not falling under the regular restrictions what all the theaters were falling under, so we kept going during the entire pandemic, which was kind of cool. And
that is a little bit unusual because I'm sure you can only let in so many people.
Oh,
then,
yeah,
too.
It was totally social distancing, and we had sometimes like literally 2, 3, 4, 5 people, you know.
Yeah.
And that was okay, but everybody enjoyed it, and it was a great space. And then my wife found this new place here directly on the Strip, and then towards the end of the I always say towards the end of the pandemic. Technically, we're still in it, I guess.
I guess that's
know.
True.
But
when will this
you
ever end?
You know what I mean.
Well,
right?
I'm wondering.
We changed in places after we had a long time renovating this place and put all the measurements in it, and now we're here.
Well, and just so people kind of have a relative idea of where this is in relation to some other things, right across the street is where the Pawn Stars store is.
Correct.
And
yeah,
so those who are familiar with the TV show here in America, Pawn Stars, that's what we just,
right.
I mean, like literally across the street from where we are here.
Yeah, we're also not very far away from the Stratosphere,
mm-hmm.
and then also pretty much
Fremont
fairly
Street.
Close to Fremont Street. Yes.
Would you say it's walking distance or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, to Fremont Street is about 15 minutes to walk.
Walk, was that right? That's not too bad then.
Not too bad, no.
And but from the Strat, probably a little bit
the
further.
The Stratosphere, I would
about
say,
a
yeah, maybe like close to 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes.
The problem I've always found in Las Vegas is that everything is so huge. And you just say, well, it's just right over there.
Right, exactly.
I can walk there. An hour later, it's like, it's still just right there. I haven't made it yet. It's been amazing. Now, this theater then also currently, it looks like seats about, what, 60 people or so?
No, we're like slightly under 50.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very intimate setting.
Very intimate setting, and we want everybody to be comfortable. So we have like nice couches where they can sit on. And the idea was born really through me. I mean, many people have the idea of making a theater, but I wanted to have it really intimate because when I was starting Magic in Germany in my earlier years, I was very often performing in somebody's living room. And the experience people had in their own living room is just priceless. You can't beat it.
Right.
Not any Magic venue can beat it. Because, you know, when you go in a theater, they say, oh, everything is set up, rigged, God knows what. But if you're really in your own living room, that goes bye-bye. You know
that's
what
right.
I mean?
Well, and it becomes a family place in which we've had that feeling, and you make people feel that way as if you were inviting someone into their home.
Exactly.
And the kinds of things that you can show them, just like you're doing card tricks, because you don't need to use jumbo cards. Everybody can see the value in the face of the cards. You can do the fill trick, and everybody can read the names on the backs of the cards and everything then well. And I like the rug, which instead of carpeting, it's kind of like a homey kind of an atmosphere.
Really homey atmosphere, yeah. That's what we wanted to create. And that's why everybody, I mean, we have like 5-star reviews because people are feeling so comfortable with everything.
Sure. You know, yeah. So do you find that now that, say, post-COVID, I guess I'll use that term, are you starting to find more audiences are starting to come back then to see the show then as well?
Yeah.
And how many nights a week are you open currently?
We have actually open every night.
Every night, okay. Yeah. With one show or two shows?
No, we have like set up many shows, like 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10.
Okay.
But sometimes there are days there's only one or two shows. Sometimes it's like 5 shows. Depends, you know what
okay.
I mean? So we go as we go because we're fairly small and we don't have the budget to promote like all the others. So we're kind of like my wife found a way to promote mainly online. We do invest, of course, also in some promotion. But but we can't afford $50,000 billboards or stuff like that.
You had mentioned to begin with also that you wanted to feature international talent here then as well. I mean, certainly like you. And so have there been other people who have come?
Yeah, we had somebody from the Dominican Republic. He was performing here for like 3 months. That was kind of cool. And we have every once in a while also Luna Shimada performing. And then if some people come in, they can perform. Yeah.
Okay. Do they, I guess, if somebody was interested in coming and working here, they should contact you, I guess?
Yeah, contact me, and then we can figure something out, sure.
Okay. Because it really is more of a parlor-type style as opposed to those who are familiar with the Magic Castle. It's not really a palace kind of a thing because the stage, just as you said, Dirk, I mean, it is intimate, like, although there is a stage.
The stage is actually almost as big as the Magic Castle.
well, the stage is, but I'm just saying as far as the intimacy with the people who are in the audience, you know, it's not high up like the castle stage
is.
So you can walk right off like you are in the living room.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of cool. And what the idea is really, and that's what I'm looking for also, if somebody wants to come and perform, is like that they're really not doing close-up, even if you can do close-up. Mm-hmm. But the idea with this venue is that they see actually a real show, what could be on a big stage, sure, but they see it in a very intimate setting.
Just like you were with the floating table, exactly, obviously, and the ball, bubble act and everything.
Right. So most of the stuff I show tonight could be played in like a seven seats.
And I have seen that with 1,000 people.
Yeah, 1,000 people, yeah.
Right.
And then
it plays just as well here.
Exactly. But when it plays here, the impact is so much better, you know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Like with any illusion, pretty much. I mean, I remember I was working on the cruise ship fully in the round. Mm-hmm. Now, there aren't that many magicians who can do their real act in the round, but mm-hmm, I'm one of them. I can. Mm-hmm. And when people experience that, it's like incredible. You know what I mean? Because they can just see wherever they want to watch it.
Yeah. Because afterwards, they're talking to each other saying, wait a minute, I saw from a different angle. I didn't. Did you see anything? Yeah. No, I didn't see anything.
Because I feel when you're in a big theater, no matter what, even if it's only 300 seat, you automatically think, come on, there's trickery involved.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
it's the ultimate thing. The minute they can't explain things, they say, God knows what's all on stage, you know?
Well, one of the reasons I want to spend so much time in the detail as to the theater itself is because I want to encourage other people who might be thinking about opening a theater, who might have been thinking or maybe had one open prior to COVID and now they've had time to kind of plot one out, to talk with you more about how your dream kind of came alive. I mean, it stayed alive during COVID,
right,
as you said, just kind of
totally
cut back a little
My
bit.
My dream,
you know,
came alive because of my wife. Without it, it wouldn't have come alive because
I
was too chicken to even do it. I kept telling her, you know, I said, hey, I always wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And I saw a great potential. And then she says, why don't we do it? And then she started and she figured it all out, how to promote and how to do it. It's a whole science behind it. That's real magic.
And did she help with the decorating and everything then as well?
Oh, she did all the decoration, yeah. I did the building part, but she told me how to build it and what to do. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? And then we had also friends helping and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a whole endeavor, you know.
And the sound booth and everything that you got back there is great. So you got someone who is...
Yeah,
that's what I think also is the music. I don't think I've seen many shows where music is played throughout the whole thing, but it adds so much.
It adds to it, yeah.
Yeah, because every little thing when you're talking about, whether it's India or Egypt or whatever, it has a little bit of that. It
brings the flair in. Ultimately, we want to also have a whole possibility to change with a background.
Yeah, like video mapping or something.
Video mapping, yeah, to change the whole entire scenery. So that will come eventually, but, you know, we're taking it one step at a time.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Well, taking it one step at a time, you do sell magic stuff. I mean, you've got back of the room sales with magic kits and everything else that's over there. So it looks like you have one or two other rooms that are similar to this.
Right.
So that can be expanded if you made it into a bigger theater. What are the plans for the rest of that?
Well, as of now, in this location, I don't think we can go bigger because of the building is very old and mm-hmm, it doesn't have any sprinkler system, mm-hmm, and that doesn't allow us to go over the amount of 49 people.
Okay, gotcha. So. But you could perhaps go have the people go from one room to have an experience up in another room or something.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And that's the idea. We have even a little close-up stage, so eventually when we have the time and the crowds coming in, that we can split it up, do a little bit of close-up in a different room, then bring them all here and then do the main show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think it's... very unique then also where you haven't got a liquor license then yet, I guess, but when people come in, you offer
honestly,
free popcorn and water.
We realized we really don't need any liquor, you mm-hmm know what I mean? Because if somebody comes and sees an hour show, he doesn't necessarily need to drink. And I like to drink myself.
But we've had a few beers together.
It's like... there's normally the only crowd who sometimes misses it if they come at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then they kind of like want maybe a drink or something.
They may have already had a couple. It's kind of like I want to smooth out the evening, you know.
But we give them soft drinks and popcorn included in the price, so
yeah,
they're happy.
I think that's pretty great. Now, you've really been performing all over the world and in television and everything. From the standpoint that the acts that you were doing, this is another thing. I think it's amazing in watching this and seeing your full act. I've seen bits and pieces of this, so I guess the many times that I've seen you and worked with you, I could probably put together the whole act, which I now saw in one piece here at this time. And there are so many different things, which obviously they all are uniquely yours. It's not necessarily someone else's ring routine or being you're using giant rings, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot to be said. And so when you're looking for somebody else who is going to be coming in, are you looking for someone who is engaging and funny, and they may use standard tricks, but they just have a good personality, looking for someone who is completely different and creative and innovative?
Well,
and,
you know, the most important thing is that they have a good personality and
okay.
can get along with the audience very well, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think
mm-hmm.
that's the major
you
part.
Do connect with the audience very
oh, yeah,
well.
For sure.
And the magic speaks for itself. I mean,
right.
You know, that's really great. So when you are working overseas and you speak, obviously, German and English, what other language do you speak?
A little bit of French.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you've been on cruise ships, do you kind of interchange back and forth?
Well, so far I only did like one major cruise ship gig, and that was like the Illusionarium with Jeff Hobson.
Oh, that's right.
And I was only doing my silent material there.
Okay.
So.
And you're doing what, like a 10-minute piece?
10-minute piece.
Okay. Because
yeah.
Jeff was the MC, and then also, was it the Evasons?
No,
was that,
no. There were a couple of people that did similar acts like that.
Okay.
Then was like Michael Giles, who passed away. You know.
Yeah.
He was part of it, and it was basically the concept was one act similar, not similar to mine, but that kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a Duff act originally. We had Jeff Hobson as a comedic
yeah.
aspect, and then we had an illusionist, you know.
And then that kind of failed after. I mean, I say failed. I mean, it was great.
It didn't really fail, but you know, I mean.
First of all,
they made many, many mistakes.
Okay.
I believe when Jeff Hobson designed the whole entire thing, they were really banking on that he would be in that show permanently.
Permanently, yeah.
But
okay.
that was not the case. So
right.
They were already disappointed with that part. But,
okay.
But whoever came in, he did a fine job, was fine.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Jeff approached me. He says, you know, they want you in the show permanently because they had another act coming after me,
yeah.
which was a great act, but it didn't work in that environment. And as a matter of fact, not so many acts could work there at the time.
Hmm.
They changed it later where it was no longer in the round. But when it originally started, it was in the round. So long story short, I started. At first, I didn't want to do it, but then I taught somebody how to do my act. And then when I wasn't there, the other person was basically doing the act. But even by doing that, the quality was not there. I mean,
it's a copy.
It's a different act. You
yeah,
understand? The
exactly.
act is me.
Yeah, it is you.
So the tricks are the same, but it's not my act because by me not being there, it can't be, you know?
Right.
And the same thing they did with all the illusions because they bought all the illusions mm-hmm. fixed mm-hmm. and then they hired illusionists who had to do their illusions.
Mm.
Now, that is a bad concept because usually it takes a lifetime to master something.
Sure.
And when you start doing, even if you are a master in magic, you all of a sudden are forced to do different material. You're no longer a master, really, because, of course, you know the basic things and you know how to walk and
right.
how to talk on stage and all that. That goes without saying. But still, if you start a new trick, no matter what you're saying, you're not going to be as professional as with all of your other material you did for like 20, 30 years. It's a normal thing.
True.
So the outcome was it took sometimes 2-3 months before the person who was coming in next was up to speed, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the illusions, you know. So not saying it was a bad show, but it was definitely, it constantly dropped, you see.
Sure.
We were here on a high level, and then somebody changes, and we're starting lower again automatically.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's like normally if you have a variety theater, you hire great people, and then the quality is always great because they do know what they're doing when they're
mm-hmm.
coming, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you can swap people as often as you want. But if you make them do a certain type of illusion, that's a problem. You know?
Well, it reminds me of these theme parks in which they will get college kids during the summer who are in dance and theater,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
who are not magicians or performers. They just know how to sing and dance.
Right, right.
And so they are training them how to do these illusions and everything. And so they're walking and
right,
dancing
right.
through these things. And they're doing them well, but it's just a cookie cutter thing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it wasn't Jeff Hobson's fault at all. He had a great idea, and it would have been even greater if you could really fully go through the original idea he had.
Yeah.
But then they started to add acting into the whole entire play, which is another thing very hard to do. So they hired actors, you
yeah.
know what I'm saying? And on top of it, these actors had to do also certain type of magic. So you dealt also with teaching the actor all of a sudden how to do a magic trick, which sometimes can be easier than the other way around, teaching a
okay.
magician how to
okay.
act. But still,
yeah.
it's challenging, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, it became a really very hard endeavor.
Unless you're actually studying with someone, let's say, and you are, like, let's say Eugene Berger has his own style, or Slidini did, or whoever, and when you see students of these people, you knew they have spent hours and months and years studying the moves and everything, and you can kind of detect the even the way they speak and hold their body or whatever, you know, kind of a thing. But when you're trying to get somebody to come in and say, okay, you're going to do table levitation. It's like, okay, after you've taught it, there's more to it. I mean, what you do,
for sure.
I mean, I've got your table. I can't do you.
Right. I mean, when there's a saying among magicians sometimes, you're like basically an actor playing the role of a magician. Mm. But I say that's stupid. Really, you're not. Mm. What you are is, if you're really good, you are a real magician. You know what I'm saying? Because you're not playing to be a magician. You are a magician.
Correct.
That's when you get your material to the next level. Same with acting. If an actor can actually play the part, not like playing the part, but be the part.
Yes.
It becomes a total different thing. And we had some actors that were actually so good, they you felt they are the person they're pretending to be. But some aren't. You know what I mean? So it's honestly, the whole world runs on the same principle. It doesn't matter what you're doing. They all have the same principles. You need to really first put in 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because whatever you do.
Yes. If you want to master
or
something.
10 years.
Yeah.
There's no such thing like overnight success. You know what I mean?
No. Exactly. And so those who are wanting to actually be successful, it has to do with putting in time and grade and flight time and actually just going and doing it and trying to find a place.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, like you've got the theater and you've got somewhere that you can work out something, some different routines. And there are too few people who have opportunities like you to come in and try something new if you wanted to.
And I did. I mean, a lot of the material you saw here tonight, some of the stuff I've done when I was younger, but other stuff I've never done.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing with the Sharpie. This was just like, because when I started during the pandemic, I had like a 50-minute show anyway. But what if you have only one person?
Yeah.
Then your 50 minutes are no longer 50 minutes, because 50 minutes is when you have 200-300 people in the audience.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because, you know, you have the applause, you have the time, you walk to somebody, you pick somebody up, all that stuff adds to the
That's
show.
True.
All of a sudden, my 50 minutes shrunk down to like 40, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's
I
true.
Said, I need to add some stuff.
Yeah, because the audience is just right there.
Yeah.
They're right, you're not
exactly.
having to walk
and
down
then,
the aisle.
Sometimes you have like two people that are really great. Sometimes they're not. They just sit there with crossed arms, you know. And
Depends
you still have to
audience.
Do your thing. Mm-hmm. And it should be still like an hour show, you know.
Right. That's what they're expecting. And they want to be entertained as well. And I would think sometimes they're coming in having been to the Criss Angels show down the street, or David Copperfield, or Shin Lim, or Matt Franco.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Then they come into a theater like this and they see it's the Las Vegas Magic Theater. It's like, and they come in and say, wait a minute, this is like a living room.
Well, I mean, they all have over time the same reaction, okay? In the old theater where we were, because it was totally different and we did the best we could with that little tiny room, but there were sometimes people, oh, you know, I'm not sure about this, whatever. One thing everybody has in common, once they get inside, they say, wow, this is really beautiful. I mean, I really enjoy it. This is really nice. Everybody says that. And then when the show is over, they said that was the best show ever, because they were part of the show. They were, you know, so close and all that stuff. But bring this across in promotional material is really hard. You know?
It is hard. I felt like after this is over, even though the house wasn't packed this evening, no one wanted to leave.
Exactly,
I mean, it's like,
yeah,
and that's what's nice. You had another room and people were mingling. I mean, for 15 or 20 minutes, I mean, nobody would leave.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So it's clear once they're here, they will definitely enjoy it and all that stuff. The trick is to get them here. Because if you tell them right away you're going to be part of the show, then there's so many people that don't even want that. You know what I'm saying? They will be okay if they see who is actually doing this. Because you see me, I'm a nice guy. Nobody will be challenged on stage. You know
Good
what
point.
I'm saying?
Yes.
So none of these people. I had so many people when I give them VIP experience on the couch and says, yeah, that's nice, but we do not want to be picked. And then when they're here, they're the first one to raise their hand. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because that gives that stigma. There's so many magicians out there. They're really, I mean, trashing the whole concept of picking somebody.
Yeah.
Honestly. When you're in one of their shows, man, I didn't even want to go up there. You know what I'm saying?
They say, I'm cool, you're a fool. I'm going to prove how you're a fool.
Exactly.
You know, make people feel foolish on stage.
So, and that's why so many people are not willing to do that. But when they see they're okay, all of a sudden they're really happy to be part of the
Well,
show.
So easy because there is no fourth wall here, almost right. Well, quite literally, because you're walking right, right out to someone.
Right.
When you're asking them, I mean, sure, they're willing to help, and you have already, with your personality,
right,
have engaged them already. And it's, I think it works out really well. I want to then go back, I guess, kind of the beginning and with some of the levitations, different things that you had worked on and invented. That had to be something that was over a period of time. Was there something that inspired you to, as far as, being the levitation king?
Right. Well, you know, it's like this. When I was starting magic, I was 8 years old, and mm-hmm. literally I was performing in people's living rooms, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah. All of my magic had to be designed in a way that it was possible to play in a living room.
Yeah, just
a
little and 5-foot area.
When I say living square. Room, mm-hmm. ideal situation is they put you somewhere on the wall and you have the back free, mm-hmm. but very often they said, hey, here's the spot, you know? All of a sudden you're in a restaurant in the middle of the audience,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you cannot say, huh, I can't really work here, you know,
right.
Not unless you want to not make the gig.
Sure, sure.
So I had to find material what works under any conditions. And my most important rule in magic is everything I do needs to be very visual, mm-hmm. meaning even if you don't understand anything I'm saying, you can still enjoy the magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done this here because every once in a while we get big groups. Like there was one group out of Spain. They were here, like 20 people.
Hmm.
And they didn't speak anything.
Any English?
No English.
Huh.
As you hear, I have
that.
Background music a little bit in the show.
Yeah.
So what I did then, I was hardly talking.
Hmm.
Every once in a while with little simple English trying to explain a little bit, but the rest was just basically background. I did the whole entire show basically with music.
Wow.
And that's good when you have visual effects, because if you have a card trick or a lot of effects would have a lot of built-in time where you need to talk a story or whatever, it's a problem.
Yes.
Because there is a climax, which is like literally 30 seconds maybe.
Right.
And that's it. You know what I mean? So it's impossible. So my material, of course, I have a nice storyline throughout my entire show
yes.
too. But if it's gone, you can still enjoy the trip.
Well, a lot of it has to do, of course, with your storyline. And
right.
that is, again, what separates magicians from magicians, because
right.
we each have our own storyline, and that's what I think the audience really wants to know, and that's why they don't feel threatened by you, is because they can relate to you, because you have a story, they do too, and
right.
they want to hear your story, and
right,
it's
exactly,
non-threatening
yeah.
and whatever,
yeah.
and it's a very interesting
right.
story. So when you had that group, did you know they were coming and a non-speaking group English?
No,
or?
No, that,
so you
that
were thrown
just
into
happened.
The,
yeah, but it happened in the entire end. Time I'm here now already 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
So I had to improvise, but it works great. So, but as I was saying, so naturally levitation was always, I was always drawn to it because the second the effect starts until the minute it's over, it's just magic.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? You don't need to explain anything. It's just like magical. You
right.
know? That's why I was always fascinated with levitation. Now, of course, you cannot do a show only based on levitation. It's impossible. You know,
not a full.
You got to yeah. have variety in it. You know what I mean? But even the one stuff what doesn't levitate is very visual, and you know. I try to
your,
have
your thumb tie is completely different from anybody else's. I just think great. I bought
right.
that from you years ago, but I've never right. performed it because it's like that's Low Sanders. You do it so well.
Well, like you wouldn't believe it. Like the story I was telling about New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The voodoo priest.
Yeah.
I mean it's a simple trick, really.
Sure.
But even people who know that trick,
yeah,
you know, and they're not magicians. Sometimes
yeah.
they said, "I have no idea how you did it," and I don't even understand it because it's the same thing. But I guess it's the story and the way I'm bringing it across. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, well, one guy who came here, he was actually a magician. He said, "Never seen it like that. I only see it that somebody does an X, you know, that from Christmas."
Yeah,
You know?
Yes.
And I said, "Well, you know, that's actually here the original version."
Yeah.
And I said, "But normally it's a dot, but with you it's a line." You know. kind of funny.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I had done that in New Orleans one time myself. I was in a bar and with a group, and there was an ashtray there, and I did it with someone, and it, because we were in New Orleans, and it was at a club, and it was just
it was
the
like
perfect
good.
Timing, and it was
perfect
like,
time,
well, it was
yeah.
creepy, you know, with real ashes,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But so that really is a great trick. So, yeah, as far as you can't do a whole, it's like doing a, you know, 90 minutes of rope tricks. You can't do that.
No.
You, you can't have a effect.
Yeah.
And so with the levitation, you obviously were inspired by seeing some body float a piano or something when you were a child, saying, oh, I don't know how that was done, but I want to learn?
Well, I was really inspired by several magicians. Definitely Finn John.
Of course.
He really inspired me for sure. And that was like a big challenge because I loved always when he was performing with bubbles. Turned out, mm-hmm. actually, mm-hmm. It's a little bit of an interesting story. I was performing in the Magic Castle and Billy McComb was there.
Yeah.
He says, Losanda, I'm watching you every day and I really enjoy it. But there is a book in the Magic Castle which is about soap bubbles.
Yeah.
I'm going to find it, make you copy and give it to you. Okay, so it turns out it was an old copy of Conradi Horster, which was towards the late 1800s written, really.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? All the stuff Finn John was doing in his act was
in that
actually
book?
In that book.
Huh.
Yes, it was kind of interesting. But that's not really what I was concerned of. When I took over, I got, of course, a lot of stuff what he did.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a pretty quick lesson very early in my career. I sent him a video and he says, this is really great, but you know, this is all my stuff. And he was right. I basically did his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, if I can give you a tip, you have to get as far away from me as possible. Because otherwise you will always be trapped in that shadow.
Sure.
So I started to create my own things. And one day we did a show together in Forges-les-Eaux, which was like in France. And I don't know why the guy who booked us both, because I felt like, why? You know, I mean, he does bubbles, I do bubbles, whatever. So for me, it was very clear. I said, when I arrived, I said, hey, I'm not going to do any bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not the originator of performing with bubbles, as I already found out in that book. Doesn't matter, but you were the one who brought it back to life.
Correct.
And I feel like it's your thing.
Right.
Okay.
You're gonna honor
so I'm not going to
sure.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I want you to do it. I want you to do it because I want to see what you're doing too.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let me just start first.
He blew smoke in his also.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah. I don't do that at all.
Yeah, you don't. Right.
So he did perform first and was great, and then I performed my stuff after, and even the audience did not see any kind of correlation between him and me. It was a completely different thing,
uh-huh.
and I mean, he was happy to see it, and he said it was great, you know. And for me, it was awesome to see because I got so far away from the original that I became unique myself,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean, which is kind of what everybody should strive to. If you buy a trick, try to alternate as far away as possible so
right.
you get your own style, you know.
Start with the original and then kind of
yeah.
build from there. I think yeah. that's important. Artists have done that for years, in which they
yeah.
will study under a master, and the master will teach them the strokes and the painting with the brushes
sure.
and the mixing colors. But then you
yeah.
get your own style, and you don't follow that same master
right.
after a while.
The problem with any of these levitation effects when there is a gimmick involved,
yeah.
meaning like either a thread or maybe a wire or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
that... And that goes also with other magic, like if you use a thumb tip or whatever you do, where there is a gimmick.
Yeah.
Magicians have the tendency to say, oh, the gimmick is doing the job kind of thing. You know
uh-huh.
what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And therefore, they stop working on themselves. That's why you see also so many people perform the floating table so bad. Because even if you do it bad, you can have a fairly good success rate in front of lay people.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't necessarily understand how it's done and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But will it ever reach heights where it should be? No, because you stopped before it gets good. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the downside on a lot of magic, in my personal opinion. So when I started had the idea with a floating table, another great influence in my life was Salvano. And he...
in Italy?
He's actually from Poland.
I was thinking of Silvan.
Yeah, not Silvan, yeah. So, and he was a great master. And he said, well, if you want to master this, you have a lot of work to do. He had never done a floating table, never. But he had so much. He had like 6 full evening illusion shows basically done over his lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had anything he was talking about, he had already done, really. So he was not a levitation specialist, but he knew what needs to happen in order that it gets good. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So we started to work on it. It was almost over a course of a year. And then I asked him, so what do you think? He said, oh, it's pretty good. He said, pretty good. I think it's really great. He says,
yeah.
no, it will be when you believe in it.
Oh.
And I said, oh, okay. And then I said, when will I believe in it? I think I believe in it. No, you don't. But when you will, it will be great. And then 8 years further down the road, he came back and saw my show, and he says, now it's fantastic, he said. You believe in it, you know. So it took that long because you literally, I say this, okay, in a way, magic is based on lies, really, if you think about it. it's a nicer form of lying, maybe, because you're not betraying people or anything,
yeah,
but
right.
you're really lying because you're
yes.
pretending to be something you're not.
You're not, right.
right? So lying in the world of energy is a very low, it radiates very low. That's why when a kid comes home and lies, parents can
spot right away.
Spot this out right away
yeah.
because it's just the demeanor and your whole entire thing. Your frequency you radiate with is very low
yeah.
when you
yeah.
lie. Same with magic, because you know you're not doing the real thing. So what needs to happen at one point in your mind that you forget you're really not doing this, that you really start to believe this is for real what you're doing.
It's a conviction.
Even if it isn't. Mm-hmm. But it has to become second nature, so you no longer need to think about what you're doing. And that's when it raises to the next level. And then all of a sudden, a trick turns into real magic in front of the eyes of the audience. Even, of course, you do still do the trick. You know what I mean?
Is it because you think, Dirk, that it becomes so natural that it becomes second nature to you, so as you're doing it, you're thinking, did I leave the stove on at home, or what about
right.
the garage?
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
That is part of it.
Okay.
Definitely, I think.
So it's
absolutely.
Not like that you're in the moment so much, but you also
no.
can't just mail
but,
it in.
Well,
it has to be fresh.
Often people say, what are you thinking when you're floating the table?
yeah,
honestly,
where did I park my car?
So absolutely nothing. Or I think about other stuff, like you said,
yeah.
because it's second nature.
Yes.
Originally, of course, I had because all good actors, they have sort of like a dialogue, what they have in their
yeah.
mind when
yeah.
they do it, and that helps. But it's only to get you jump-started, really. Once you're really knowing what you're doing, you no longer need it
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
you're doing it hmm. automatically, and that's when it becomes real.
So is that what Silvano meant, that you didn't have it, and then when he came back later, it was
yeah,
because...
Yeah, it was basically, you really have to believe it. Like when you vanish a coin, you really have to believe you put the coin here
sure.
and not in the other hand. So that needs to happen. When you do, then all of a sudden, it becomes real magic.
That's why I said it's conviction.
Yeah.
It's if you have the conviction, the audience will be convinced.
Right, exactly.
But you have to convince yourself, I guess,
you have to convince
first
yourself.
Of all,
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
And then with what I think also with the bubbles, it's perfect from the standpoint that it's beautiful, and then they float and everything, and so then you have a table. It just is a natural progression, and then you know starting
right,
of course
right.
and with the elegant glass of doing that then as well. I like the idea of starting it yourself rather than having it in someone's hand,
right? Because
you've got
right.
a little bit more control and everything, but then ending up dropping it in their hand.
Dropping it in the hand, yeah,
yeah,
yeah for
so
sure.
So something looks like that's developed over a number of years.
Oh yeah, and the story, that's another thing. I don't want to add more lies to a lie. So all the stories I'm telling in the show are real. So I did actually do that that game I was telling,
Pictionary? What
turns into the Ouija board.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes, where you move the glass around, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
That was actually a true story, but it never flew, of course. That's
right.
added.
But you put your fingers
but
around the rim of the glass.
The fundamental story was actually true, and my friend was 12 years old.
Uh-huh. And used the glass as a planchette.
And used the glass, and actually the glass did say that he will die with 21. And oddly enough, he did die with 21. Which was kind of weird. So
seriously?
Seriously. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not telling that
okay.
on stage because I feel it could be too deep. You know what I'm saying?
People might start thinking about that. They kind of, and then you're already into the rest of it. They're still thinking,
I
wonder how he did die. And man, that was creepy.
exactly.
If you're trying to build a story for bizarre purposes or seance or something, that might be good.
Well, even the story from India, the guy really laid in front of my door. I was shocked to hell because I was jet-lagged. I wanted to go for a walk, and he was lying there, I was saying, okay. So I keep basically taking aspects of my real life and make it into parts of my stories
and
the magic.
Your story and your act.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And with the tables, by the way, I know... I kind of want to get into a little bit of piracy here because I know that there have been, whether it's books or DVDs or whatever, about everybody's ripping off people from other countries and everything. And your table has been ripped off more times than probably anything. And nobody can build a table like you. And there are plastic tables and all these other kinds of – they even look cheap. I mean,
they look cheap.
Amazing. Yeah. I assume that you have had people send those tables to you and say, hey, this is crap and didn't work, thinking it was your table.
Yeah, that happened many times.
Has it really?
Yeah, many times. Sometimes people know exactly what they're having, but very often, mainly when people take over some estate from some magicians and they have maybe a table and they think, oh, it's an original. And then they ask me and I say, no, sorry, it's not.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is, but, stuff like that. So the truth is, I think it's at the end, nobody can really protect themselves from piracy.
Mm-hmm.
It will always exist and always will. But what you can do, you can always try to be better. You know what I'm saying?
And you mean with your product or
with the product itself?
Or ethically.
And also, yeah. I mean, among magicians, if we were to ever get to the point where really people would no longer support copies, the problem would be solved, of course.
Exactly.
But
it's like drugs. If people didn't use drugs, it wouldn't be sale drugs.
At the end, it's about money, too. You know, copy is cheap, whatever, and let's try it.
Yeah.
And I think there's, to a certain extent, no harm in it either. If somebody really buys like a $50 table, he would never buy a table what costs $800 anyway.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But will they have the same success? Absolutely not. So at a certain point, they should then, when they start doing this more often, think of maybe buying the real thing. You know what I mean? Because again, magic is so much about energy, and when you know you are having a copy, you're not going to perform as good as if you know you have an original.
Right.
Just like when you drive in a Mercedes, if this is your car, it makes you feel better or makes you feel good to drive a Mercedes, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you could drive a Hyundai. Nothing against Hyundai, but you know, if this is your car, then it makes you feel good to drive a Hyundai. But same thing with that. So if you feel better, then you should do it. You know what I'm saying?
Just as an aside, I remember talking with Terry Seabrook one time when we were there was a sale at the Tuxedo Warehouse in Houston,
right.
And I said, "Hey, let's go down. Oh, can't you come with me? Because the shirts are on sale and everything that and whatever." And he said, "I'll go with you, but I'm not going to buy anything."
Right, right.
And he said, "I prefer to go to Bond Street in London." And he said, "I buy the most expensive tailor-made tux and suit and everything that I can, because if I look good, I feel good. If I feel good, I perform good." So
right.
It's just there's
absolutely
a lot to that.
100%. Mm-hmm. You need to dress the way you like to dress. You need to wear what you like to wear. You need to have on props what you like is best for you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you've got a perfect character. You talk about being a warlock, and I mean the way that you have that big leather belt
right,
and your cloak and everything, and
right.
And
then
the smoke and whatnot. I mean, it looks like you are just coming from some fantasy drawing to life.
right. Yeah. So you know, it all plays along. Salvano always said to me, you know, a good magician is not about one good trick. It's about all the little details in between, and all these little details need to come together. And then it turns into the grander picture, so to speak, and then everything is working hand in hand. You know?
Well, attention to detail is the essence of showmanship, as Henning Nelmes would say.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Also, going back for just a second on the tables, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it right for a while that somebody would send you a rip-off table, you applied credit towards it?
Yeah, I did that for a while, but then I realized it really doesn't help much.
Okay. It didn't get
and then I said, you know what,
I'd
rather do it differently. Let's support all the people who are already supporting me. So when they buy like a $700, $800 table from me, they can trade it or upgrade it to a better model without losing any of their money. So if you like in 5 years decide to get, let's say, a round table now and you want to upgrade, then all you have to do is pay the price difference.
Yeah.
And so I'm really supporting the people who supported me.
I don't know how many people realize about what you do and how good of a not just a craftsman, but also an ethical businessman you are, because I hadn't had my table for long, and I was rehearsing with it, obviously, before you ever perform it, and it slipped, and I grabbed it, and my thumb went through that, and I called you, and you said, "I'll take care of it," and you fix it, and it now has like a starburst on the top. It's unique to me. There's no other like that. It's like, oh, man, he should have made them all like this. It was like a inlaid top, and it was beautiful now.
Yeah,
I almost don't want to put a cover over it.
Yeah. Well, you know, my father also helped me a lot, and he was building tables, but recently he had passed away. And so I'm building it now all by myself, doing also shows. That's a problem, because then it's hard to keep up with all orders.
How are sales, by the way?
Sales are okay, but like I said, now I have a lot of longer times where people have to wait, because I just can't build them as fast, because it takes a certain amount of time to make them good. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I don't want to cut corners there. So
it's not the supply chain. You're not shorted.
Some of the time is also the wood. Because there is right now like a shortage of that balsa wood, because all these big windmills, I didn't know that until I investigated, the core of those are all made out of balsa wood.
The core of what?
The wings.
The core of airplanes.
The outside is, of course, like acrylic glass or whatever you call it. You know, they make it over that.
Fiberglass.
But the inside is balsa wood.
Okay.
And that's why
we're having this
shortage of all the balsa.
Did not know that. That's interesting to know then, too. So,
But
how many would you say that you make in a year?
It varies. I mean, right now, during the pandemic, it wasn't that many like it used to be.
You mean like 100 or so?
Yeah, it's way over 100, yeah, for okay. sure. Yeah. In some years, 200-300.
That's why I was wondering, during the pandemic, if people felt like, hey, now's the time that I can buy one and start practicing that. Did you see
Yeah, some
a bump?
People did. Okay. They did do that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, I don't know how often they practice, but.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yes. Do you get some videos people send you from time to time saying?
Yeah, and then I try to help them and say, okay, you have to do this, this, and this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a work in progress. The table is like, even if somebody takes an hour is probably the max you can take on lessons with the table because your fingers get tired, you know what I mean?
True.
So it's more like you need to reconnect over time, and then every time you work on different things because there's so many details in this.
Just like playing
illusion.
Golf, your yeah. grip.
I mean, the video, what comes with it, technically teaches you everything I know about
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
But the tendency of people is they never watch the video.
Yeah.
And if they
you don't read the instructions.
They watch it once.
Yeah.
You know, I guarantee you watch this video like 100 times, you get 100 more details what you have to work on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
because there's
mm-hmm.
so much information in this 2-hour video, you can't take it in all at once.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think one of the most beautiful things, the most important things that I learned from that is about, in order to make it look real, your hands are moving and the table is...
Yeah, you have to kind of like isolate the motions, yeah.
Completely, yeah, and isolating the motions. Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah. That it's like any other... thing you buy. I mean, the instructions are the last thing you read.
You know, for sure.
Unless it's something from IKEA and you're trying to put together a chest of drawers or something, you know, like that.
Exactly.
I noticed that you don't do coins or a lot of manipulation. You open up, however, with some billiard balls.
I do, yeah.
Is that something that you've always had an interest in billiard balls as well? I've not seen your billiard
ball
routine. Yeah,
you know
until
what?
Tonight.
It was always my dream to do it. And then when Salvano taught me a nice routine and I did it, and then I tried it for 300 shows in an amusement park, and what was happening is like, I don't even know. I my hands always started to sweat, and it was weird to do it for me.
Okay.
And then, I don't know, I left them aside because one thing I learned from Finn John also, he said, if there's one thing in your show, what bothers you in terms of like you're not sure if it always works out great, take it out. Your entire act will be better by not doing it. Because otherwise you worry your entire show.
About that one thing.
Will this thing work out today? You know what I'm saying? So I took it out. And then when the whole thing here happened, I needed more material. And I said, what the heck, just do it. And then I started to put it in. And there were so little people, you know, 1, 2, 3 people. You're not nervous by performing for 1 or 2
yeah,
people.
Yeah, that's right. You're working in an elevator, basically.
That's right.
One-on-one, yeah.
So I did it, and then I got used to it. Now I have it permanently in the show. It's actually good. So.
Well, it kind of reminds me a little bit of David Copperfield, keeping in that alien he's been working with for years. And
he's developed the
full spaceship and everything else, but a little at a time that he's developed. It's like, I know there's something there, and he keeps working with it. Which is contrary to what you were saying, is that if something's not working or it makes you nervous, take that out and put in something else. I know some people...
Well, there's two sides of the story. I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm doing like the bubbles, for instance, at the beginning. When I first did it, I was really shaking and all that stuff, you know, but I didn't give up on it. I kept going and going because I saw the potential in it and I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
It took like years to get it to where it is now, you know.
Oh, Vito Lupo used bubbles,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Right.
Okay.
And so there's that thing. Either you have to put in the real time or at one point you have to say it's not for me and take it out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yes.
The easy way is to take it out. The harder way is to work on it until it's good.
Are there some things that are in your act then that you would not take out?
Yeah, I definitely would never take out the bubbles or the table. I think that's like...
That's the core of your act. Everything's
core
based
of my
around
act,
that.
Like sort of like a signature piece of what I'm
the
doing.
The reason I ask that is I remember years ago booking Walter Blaney. I was in a position back in 1980 or 79, 80, somewhere in there, and I for booking him for a conference. And he said it was going to be X dollars for this, but if you don't want the levitation, then it'll be X minus something. So he's charging more for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm assuming that although is the core of your act, do you feel uncomfortable if you're not doing it and you book?
No,
you
actually,
book
at the beginning
it?
I did. Now I no longer do because I went through a period of time where I was sometimes forced to do something. I didn't have it with me or whatever. And I realized it plays just as good without it. Because the truth is people are not they don't care about the tricks. They care about you. Okay? So whatever you do, whatever you do is what you do.
Yep.
And if you don't make a big deal out of it, nobody else will. You know, mm-hmm. So nobody else would miss it if magicians probably, but nobody who doesn't know me would ever miss it if I don't have it.
But if you got a poster out front with you know, levitation, right, or a car, for instance, or something,
I stopped many times. My show is the Chainbreaker. You know, mm-hmm. It's a very strong piece.
It is a strong piece.
You can stop with that, or other things. I have a very good. I didn't do it tonight. Like a very good handkerchief routine. What I'm doing, many things, where I feel like I could end the show with, you know, if I want to.
Yeah, for example, yeah, it looked like you, what was that, with the Indian rope, was that supposed to be a longer piece, or, I mean, it kind of came to life, but I was expecting it to
stand up
and
I want
to
keep this short on purpose.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a short piece.
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of like an interlude piece.
Okay, yeah. I see. It played like that, but then later I was thinking the way that you were talking about the Indian rope, you know, if you really told the whole story about the kid climbing the rope, but you didn't. So
no,
I mean, if you would have done that, people would expect the rope to have gone up, but it didn't. So
these Americans don't even know what it means. I asked many times, "Do you guys know the Indian rope trick?" No.
Nobody but magicians, huh?
Nobody in Europe. It's more popular. I don't know.
Really?
Over here, nobody knows it. So I always say, I know you guys don't know it, but I'm telling you the story anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of Europe, when we were talking about France then a little bit early, did you ever work at the Crazy Horse? I know Finn John did, but
No, I never did. No.
That's a difficult gig to get. I know even Gaetan Bloom, who lives in Paris, had a difficult time with Kevin James.
Right.
Finally, was able to get him in. And were you ever trying to get that?
No, I never really tried.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
So does an agent kind of book things for you and you kind of go wherever they send you, or have you have
right some? Now, I don't have any agent. I just book everything directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people want to book it. You know
okay.
what I mean?
Are you feeling like you're easing into some sort of a semi-retirement?
No, I don't think so.
With this theater?
I feel like I will never retire.
Well, look at me. Exactly.
Yeah. But, of course, you know, I'm trying to pick what I want to do. Right now the theater is really a cool thing.
It is.
I've never done it, and so I feel happy with it. And then after that, I like to travel, honestly. I could even see myself just completely go out of magic and just travel the world and tell other people about my experiences in the world, you know, stuff like that. Maybe make a YouTube channel. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I could see that happening to myself. Mm-hmm. But magic will always be part of me because mm-hmm. I like it so much. And for me, it doesn't feel like work. I enjoy it. So,
could you leave us with one good story of something perhaps that would have been one of your world travels or something that that happened that?
One good big story. Well, there's many good stories, but one I will always remember. It's like I was at in my younger years, and I was at a school, mm-hmm. and there was a kid coming towards me, and he says, "You know, I've seen many magicians, but they're not real. But you are real."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, no, I'm not real."
Hey,
no, you are. You
literally
are.
Burst your bubble.
You are real. And, you know, because the magic, what I'm doing looks real, I guess. And then he said, "Well, really, I'm quite older than you think I am," because he was a real little kid.
Yeah.
And so it turned out he stopped growing, basically.
I see.
He was way, way older. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, tell you what, I usually don't do this, but I'm going to give you my special wand, my magic wand, okay?"
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little illusion with a magic wand just to make him believe that the wand has some magical powers.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I said, "I'm going to give you this wand. And if you truly believe in it, you start growing." I said to him. What else could I do?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I forgot about it. Year later, I came back into that thing, and he did grow. Now, I didn't do that. I know that. Of course not.
But he had the
but
belief.
But somehow,
yeah.
Whatever that was, gave the trigger point, or it was just coincidence. I don't know, but
wow.
I thought it was a fantastic story to
and
tell.
In life, there are no coincidences. You know, that, wow. What a story.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So, again, if people want to buy tickets and come to see this fabulous theater.
Yeah,
and,
just go to our website and then buy the tickets.
Right there. The website URL is what?
It's like Las Vegas Magic Theater Shop.com.
Shop.com?
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
right.
Okay, got it. Yeah. And then the last thing I always close with, I want to find out, what is your magic word? Not necessarily like abracadabra. What I mean is, what is your philosophy of life? I mean, we've talked about some different things and things that are important to you. So what is a phrase or something you live by that when you wake up in the morning is like,
You know, I think the most important thing is whatever you do, you have to do it full-heartedly and then go for it. And then at the end, I fundamentally believe you have to shave off the extra access you don't need. You know what I mean? Hmm. Especially in terms of magic, because many magicians, they overcomplicate things. And when you narrow it down to simplicity of the core of the essence of what it is, it becomes, after a while, real magic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I like definitely when somebody has figured it out to either live a very simplistic life or live or perform an act which has a high impact but very simple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. So shave off the rough edges and everything.
It takes a long time to get there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you go through, it's automatic. So first you want to add more stuff. And mm-hmm. then when you reach a certain point, you start taking things away. And then sometimes you feel like, oh, wow, it's gotten better.
You realize that by adding
better?
It actually detracts.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like with my bubbles, that used to be at one point 15 minutes because I was fascinated with bubbles. And then at one point I cut it down, cut this down, this down, this down. I cut it down to like literally like 2.5 minutes.
Sure.
And then that was the moment when everybody talked about it. Because you know what? If you leave people wanting more, that's the best thing you can do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's something I could talk about and they
yes.
could hold on to.
Absolutely. And that's the reason why I'm finishing also my show with a vanishing table. Because there is something with, if something doesn't show up anymore, leaves them a little bit unsatisfied. Where is it?
Yeah.
But it keeps them also talking.
It's like changing the 1 to 100 and then changing it back to a 1. It's like,
exactly.
Wait.
Exactly, right. So, yeah, I think that's kind of like an important thing.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Yeah. Oh, Dirk Losander, thank you very much. This has been a wonderful chat. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And again, good luck with this theater into the years, the future as well. And I hope you start getting more and more people coming here as a result of listening to this.
Sure.
And of course, you're going to be traveling still, and we're going to be seeing you at
conventions. Yeah, I will be going to conventions. Not as much as I used to, but yeah, mm-hmm. I still do it.
You plan on going to FISM?
No, show? I'm not going to FISM.
Okay.
No, but I'm going to the IBM.
Mm-hmm. In Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Yep.
And then also planning on going to the TAOM.
Yep. See you then in Fort Worth as well. That sounds great.
And probably by next year going to Blackpool again. I wasn't mm-hmm. there last year, but this time.
I wasn't either.
Yeah.
Just I thought, well, I'm going to give it one more year.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Dirk Losander. This is Scotty Al. Thank you, Dirk, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast and for sharing your thoughts on the theater and also just on life and creativity. And I always love spending some time with you. You always have a lot of good stuff to say. I appreciate your friendship. And I'm sure the listeners enjoyed this then as well. Well, we have a lot more content coming up in the next few weeks. And if all goes well, my plan is to see some of you at the IBM convention that Dirk talked about in Atlanta. And if you can't make it there, I will be giving you some daily updates from the convention floor, from the talent and the dealers and the registrants and organizers, and just kind of giving you the feel as if you were there, even if you can't make it. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to live a simple life by shaving off the rough edges of your magic, so that way you have just the essence of magic, which is the best it can be. This is Scotty out.